What is up? Welcome to another edition of the NFL Fantasy Football Podcast. It's me, your man, MG Marcus Grant, alongside the Fantasy Hall of Famer, Michael Fulmer. I guess I shouldn't say alongside because we are separated by several miles.
Yes.
The three of us actually are separated by several miles. So here we are back again.
And it's opening day and it's depressing. I got my Yankee hat on, but...
I know I should break out some Dodger gear or something just, in honor of opening day. This is our life for a while, it seems, right?
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, the mayor of L.A. is talking about, May at the earliest.
Yeah.
So it's...
Whew, man, this is the new normal. So anyway, we are here to help you try to get through it as best as possible. I know everybody's looking for a distraction, so if we can offer that up for you for at least a little bit, we are glad to do so. Last podcast on Tuesday, we talked about winners and losers, guys who move teams from one team to another and whether or not they got better or potentially got worse. Today, we'll talk about winners and losers, guys who didn't go anywhere but maybe are helped or hurt by some of the moves that their teams made. We'll do that. We'll talk about some of the other moves that happened since the last time we spoke to you. And I don't know, we'll talk about some fun, try to have some fun or something productive about this whole quarantine situation we are all in. Before we do that, though, we'll talk to our faithful producer, Senior Edward L. Murphy, Esquire. Murph, what's new?
Yeah, Fab just mentioned what the mayor said, and he yesterday at his press conference, does one every day out here, like around like 5:15, I believe, and he shut down the park. He shouldn't like Runyon Canyon and stuff, which is a really famous, popular spot to hike if you live in the Los Angeles area. And I was doing okay in terms of like the quarantine, like going out and exercising, getting that kind of stuff. And I bought a basketball, a football, a pump. I actually have it next to me. I was going to get kettlebells and go outside. So I was like, this is great. I can still go to parks and get my hikes in. I could toss the ball around. I could do weights outside. And then he closed in all these parks. And I get why. Trust me. Like I saw the pictures from Runyon. I saw how many people were in packs, not following the social distancing rules. But like, just when I thought like, all right, maybe this quarantine isn't so bad. I can get outside and do my thing. It's like all the parks are now closed and there's cops actually like surveilling the parks to make sure people don't go in there in groups. So now I'm just like, well, so much for that. Now I'm back inside and stuck. Can't do much unless you're in like a private hangout area. So yeah, that's a real bummer for us out here. Also, it's like 48 degrees, which is also terrible.
It's not
which
nice.
Which is like unheard of.
One thing we've learned, or maybe it's just been confirmed, is that a lot of people are very stupid and reckless.
Yeah, just follow the rules. If you follow the rules and people are on top of each other, we could still be hiking around, and there's a lot of other good hikes, but like they're all closed now because of those people. They were so excited to get outside, and like they thought, well, if I'm outside, I could hang out with my friends and do whatever. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, look, you guys know this because you live in L.A. People who live in L.A. know this. Runyon is a cluster on the best of
days, it's terrible.
Right? Yeah. So, like, yep. So like when everything else is shut down and there's nowhere else to go, I had to imagine that Runyon was going to get even worse. But, yeah, now that's been taken. We can't have nice things.
No.
That's the long and short of this
nothing.
Right now. So, all right. Enough of that sadness. Let's do some news.
Through the news.
Okay, well, since we last talked to you, there have been a few other moves that have been made. The biggest one, the Panthers sign Robbie Anderson. The guy who was the biggest remaining free agent wide receiver is now off the board. He goes to Carolina. I don't know, Fabs. People have asked me about this. I've talked about this. I don't get it. I mean, I guess I get it for Robbie Anderson. Like, they sign you to a nice deal. You get to reconnect with your college coach, Matt Rhule, that you worked with at Temple. But in terms of his fantasy value, like I don't really understand what this is doing for anyone.
Nah, it sucks. And let's be honest, Robbie Anderson's overrated. He is because he's been all or nothing for the last 2 years. In the first 8 weeks of last season or the first eight games, he averaged like 8 points a game. And then down the stretch, he was better. He's not a number one receiver. He's a field stretcher. So actually, for the Panthers, this is a pretty nice move, although Teddy Bridgewater is not a guy who's throwing the ball deep all too often. And yeah, from a fantasy standpoint, I mean, Robbie Anderson's a 4 or 5 for me because number one, I don't trust him. Number two, I mean, Christian McCaffrey's going to get a million targets. DJ Moore's going to get a million targets. I think it hurts the value of Curtis Samuel. We'll talk about that later on.
Yeah, we'll get into that one.
But I mean, like, it's a blah move for fantasy. And so good for the Panthers, good for their passing game. For fantasy, Anderson's 4 or 5 for me.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of feel that way. So, I mean, I'm of two minds. One, he gets away from Adam Gase's offense, which is a right. plus. Yeah. Like, that's a plus, right? We saw what happened to all those guys last year. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, I mean, you talk about it. He is a field stretcher, right? His biggest asset is his long speed. Teddy Bridgewater is not known as a guy who's going to stand back there and sling the ball deep. So, right. I don't know. I felt like this is a weird situation. And I guess for Anderson, what I took away from it is, I don't know how many offers were coming his way, and considering how deep the draft is for wide receivers,
probably
I think you take whatever good offer you can get, because if you wait till after the draft, those offers are going to get even harder to find once teams draft the guys.
Right. I think it was 2 years and $20 million or something like that. So
something like that. Yeah.
Take it.
Other wide receiver signings. Philip Dorsett leaves the Patriots. He heads west to Seattle, joins the Seahawks. They got a lot of speed there, but I feel like unless they're somehow committing to throwing the football more, I just don't see enough target volume in his future to make him really worthwhile.
He's depth. That's all he is. you got Lockett, you got Metcalf, and that's it from a fantasy standpoint in Seattle. So,
yeah, they're still going to be run heavy, I would think. And like you said, the targets are going to funnel through those two main guys, and that's kind of all you go.
And like they have three tight ends now if Disley can come back. So I mean,
if he comes back, yeah. Well, Robbie Anderson leaves the Jets. Brashad Perriman joins the Jets, signs a 1-year deal for up to $8 million. I know he was great down the stretch, Fabs. I'm sure he helped a lot of people win fantasy championships with his final 3 weeks after Mike Evans and Chris Godwin got hurt. I'm not buying into that, though, for this year. Going to the Jets, going to that offense that is a mess, that still doesn't really have a true number one receiver. I can't imagine I want any parts of Brashad Perriman.
Yeah. Who would you rather scenario? Okay. Would you rather have Robbie Anderson or Perriman? Like right now, I'd rather have Perriman.
Because he's got an easier path to targets right now.
Exactly. But I mean, the Jets could potentially draft a wide receiver, maybe even in round one. We'll see. I mean, they have Jamison Crowder, and what else? I mean, there's not a whole lot there. So then you've got Adam Gase, who ruins offensive skill position players' careers, not named Peyton Manning and those playing with him in Denver. So, yeah, Perriman's a 4 or 5 for me, and I'd rather have him over Robbie Anderson. But it's not the best move. And you mentioned it, Perriman was really useless in a waiver wire player before both Godwin and Evans went down last season, and then he was very useful down the stretch, but. Perriman's been a bust in his career in the National. Yeah. He was a first round pick by the Ravens, and he never did anything. So, late round pick 4 or 5 for me.
This will be his fourth team in 4 seasons.
Right, that tells you
a clue.
Yeah.
So, Tyler Eifert is no longer in Cincinnati after seven injury plagued seasons there. He is signing a deal with the Jaguars. Look, man, that was it 2015. Eifert had 13 touchdown catches. The other 6 years of his career, he has 11 total. I guess if he can stay healthy, there's potential there. I mean, he's a tight end, too, at best. Maybe he's a waiver wire guy. I can't imagine spending any real draft capital on Tyler Eifert.
You know, I mean, so he knows the offense, though, because he was with Jay Gruden previously. So that could be an advantage. But, I mean, I don't know. I just feel like he is what he is. He's a tight end too that you'll maybe draft late, who is not durable. And I get it. Like, you know, one of his injuries was bad luck. But overall, when a guy has as many injuries in his career as Tyler Eifert has, you know, fantasy owners kind of write him off as being prone to injuries. So that's sort of where he's at. And you mentioned it. He had that one big season for the Bengals, and since then it's been just a litany of injuries. So. Late round pick at best.
He played 16 games for the first time in his career last year. 436 yards, 3 touchdowns.
Didn't do much. I mean, which was surprising too, because no AJ Green, and they still couldn't get him involved in that offense enough to make him valuable in fantasy.
Yeah, there you go. Last bit of news. The Vikings have signed Tajay Sharp, I guess ostensibly to help replace Stephon Diggs. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I still think if I'm going for a number two receiver in Minnesota, I mean, look, this is, we'll get to Adam Thielen and how this, you know, affects him. But if I'm looking for a number two receiver in Minnesota, I feel like I would probably take my chances on BC Johnson before I did the Tajae Sharpe. I mean, I don't know that I'm excited about either one of them.
Right.
But I don't know that Tajae Sharpe is the guy who steps in and becomes Stephon Diggs 2.0.
Yeah, I mean, like, if all things remain the same, he'll probably be a late-round pick in some deeper leagues, but you would think the Vikings are going to do more at the wide receiver position probably through the draft. So, I mean, they gave him a one-year deal. It's right now he's the number two wide receiver, which tells you, right, you know, what's going on there in Minnesota. He's probably the favorite to be the number two. But the Vikings can't be done at wide receiver. They have to add more talent to that.
I think so.
And this is a team that has, you know, playoff and championship aspirations. So they have to make some improvements at wide receiver after trading Diggs. And you know, they have draft capital, so they will.
Absolutely. All right, there you go. That's pretty much everything you need to know.
That was the news.
All right, let's talk some winners and losers, guys who stayed put but potentially either were helped or hurt by the things their teams did around them. We'll start with the winner's side, and look, this is a hands down, right? Kyler Murray. I mean, the hype on Kyler Murray, Fabs, is already out of control. So now, I guess my only question is, what, I know that none of us will probably get Kyler Murray because, what, he's going to come off the board, what, fourth round? Fifth round this year?
I would guess fifth or sixth round. That's mm-hmm. where I would guess that he would go. And because everyone's gonna look at the addition of Nuke Hopkins and think, whoa, man, he could be, you know, Lamar Jackson this season. I don't know, he ain't gonna be that good, but he's my third quarterback right now. You know, I've got Lamar, I've got Mahomes, and I've got Kyler. The offense plays fast. He's got a lot of weapons. They are gonna score a ton of points. He's got a year of NFL experience under his belt. So he averaged right around 18 points last year. So you can easily see him popping up over the 20 point per game average. So, right. Yeah, I mean, but again, you mentioned it. We're probably not going to get him, but in a lot of home leagues, he may go a little bit sooner. But fifth round, sixth round, I feel like that's kind of like the sweet spot for where people are going to be looking for Kyler Murray.
Yeah, it's funny. Because I was, you know, at the end of last season, sort of saying that Kyler could be the new Lamar Jackson in the sense that he's the guy that you could wait, get near the end of your draft, and then have him give you like production that exceeded what you spent on him in draft capital. Mm-hmm. But I feel like by the end of the year, a lot of people started kind of picking up on that same idea. And now the value, the discount that you would have gotten on Kyler Murray is completely gone. Like, totally that's it. Gone. Like, if you got him in Dynasty last year, congratulations, because in redraft leagues, like, the value, the draft discount is completely gone for him.
Done. So, yep, exactly right.
So, Miles Sanders in Philadelphia. I mean, Jordan Howard is gone. We'll see if the Eagles do something in the draft when it comes
Please
to running back.
Please don't. Please.
But right now, what? I mean, Darren Sproles retired, right? I mean, like,
it's Boston Scott and Sanders at the top of the depth chart at this point.
Yeah, I mean, so this is sort of the Miles Sanders show, which is, I think, what a lot of us were wanting last year. It kind of took a while for it to sort of happen. But now, at least for the moment, this is his show. Although, I mean, we know Doug Peterson, right? He's not a one running back guy. I can't imagine it stays this way.
Right, but the biggest obstacle to Sanders being an RB2 in fantasy on a regular basis is gone with Howard going to Miami. If you look at the numbers that Sanders posted last year, there was like a four-week stretch where Jordan Howard was out. Sanders averaged almost 20 points a game. And we saw the emergence of Boston Scott as well. But Miles Sanders, listen, he comes out of Penn State, didn't play as much as he might have because he had this dude Saquon Barkley ahead of him on the depth chart. But, I mean, he's a good all-around back. He really is. I mean, he can catch the ball out of the backfield, and he is going to end up being one of my favorite breakout candidates for 2020, and he finished as the top 15 running back as a rookie. So I feel like he's still got plenty of room in his ceiling to become a superstar. So Sanders is, at this point, he's the second-round pick. Third-round pick at worst. Third-round pick at worst.
He has moved up quite a bit. And it's funny because I think we're now just starting to talk about him, because I hadn't heard a whole lot about Miles Sanders in the last few days, but now I think people are starting to kind of pick up. Chris Godwin, I mean, this is, excuse me, this is obvious here, you know, obviously when they get Tom Brady, but the thing that I talked about and wrote about is that we know that Brady loves his slot guys, in part because he fed Julian Edelman a ton of targets. Even if he doesn't throw the ball a ton downfield, Chris Godwin was so good after the catch. I think he gets a much bigger boost than Mike Evans. He's a huge winner here.
Yeah, I mean, he finished second in fantasy points among wide receivers last season. So how much more can he ask? I feel like Jameis is what he is. And I feel like Godwin's his value doesn't increase to me or decrease at all. He kind of just remains like the same. He's going to be like a top.
Maybe he closes that huge gap between him and Michael
Thomas. No doubt.
All right. Let's see. Darrell Henderson. We know Todd Gurley obviously gone. So Henderson in theory moves up. Any thoughts on Malcolm Brown too? How much this helps him?
I don't know. I mean, like, it helps him, but I mean, honestly, the Rams are probably going to draft a running back, right? Like, you would think they're going to draft somebody.
You would think.
So this could be like a very short-lived winner in terms of Darrell Henderson's fantasy value, because right now it's him and Malcolm Brown and you know, not much of anything else. So the Rams go out and draft a running back, and that could absolutely put a huge damper on the Henderson hype. And there was hype last season around him because he was so good at college. I mean, he averaged over almost 9 yards a carry in his final season there. So he didn't really do much of anything. Gurley kind of remained the guy for the most part, especially in the second half of the season. But right now, as we stand, Darrell Henderson's the starting running back for the LA Rams and their ugly-ass logo. And that means he's an RB2 flex starter for right now.
Were you talking to Eric Dickerson about that logo?
No, it's ugly. It's ugly. It's stupid. I like the Ram. Like, the Ram head is okay.
The Ram head's cool.
But the logo's stupid. Like, I don't know why teams who already have great logos ever go away from them. Like, I guess it's because they want to make more money in merchandise because fans will go out and buy that. But like the Cowboys never changed their logo. The Packers never changed their logo. The Raiders never changed their logo. The Rams, I mean, you know, they're an iconic team. Yeah, they went to St. Louis, but back in the days in Austin. Why would you? I don't know. I'm not going to get into it, but I don't like that Rams head is okay. The other logo is
that
crap.
LA thing is that
it's
LA thing
garbage.
Is
garbage. It's garbage.
It looks sort of like chargery to begin with.
I don't like it.
The other thing is, I actually thought, because, you know, it sort of leaked a couple weeks ago, and everybody was like, "This is dumb and stupid." So I figured maybe they would tweak it a little bit and come up with something different, but no. They did pretty much the exact same thing.
We had Austin Eckler on the show a few weeks ago, and he was like, Austin's got to be happy because the Chargers are going to the more of the Potter Blues.
Potter Blue, I know. Those are sweet.
This season, so that's good. I actually started something on Twitter. I'm going to do it every day for the next 32 days. I'm going to tweet out my favorite jersey of every single team. I started with the Buffalo Bills today, and then I want people to – the thread is, like, ridiculous. There's tons of people. But it's only one team per day. Like, I have people posting the creamsicles and, like, the Patriots and Pat the Patriot stuff. It's only one team per day. But today we did Buffalo. Trying to have a little fun on social media. Right. But that Rams thing. What's worse, Marcus? The Rams logo or that crappy Dolphins logo that they came out with a few years ago? Because that one stinks, like, too.
Jumping into the sun or whatever.
It sucks. It's weird. Terrible. They had a great logo, man, and they ruined it.
That wasn't great. So basically the Rams are a loser when it comes to
that's right. Darrell Henderson's a winner, but the jersey he's got to wear that's a loser.
There you go. Back to the winner's side though, Adam Thielen, we talked about it a little bit. I mean, obviously no more Stephon Diggs. The Vikings still needing wide receiver help. So, I mean, as of this moment, Adam Thielen is getting pretty much all of the targets, I think, in that passing game right now.
He's what, a third or fourth round pick now? Right now, like, as we stand? Got it. I mean, he missed a lot of time with injuries last season. He averaged only 11 points a game. But, you know, Diggs opens up 94 targets. And you know, Thielen the year before was tremendous. And we remember how good he was in the first half of the season where he was putting up 100 yards, like, every single week. So, yeah, his value is up right now. And honestly, I don't know that the Vikings can add a wide receiver who's going to make Thielen's value go down that much. Regardless, I feel like he's the number one option in Minnesota for Kirk Cousins.
Yeah, no, I mean, he's definitely the number one option. So, I just, keep an eye on what happens draft-wise, but Adam Thielen gets a big, big boost for that. Baker Mayfield. The Browns go out, they get Austin Hooper to go along with all the other weapons they have in the passing game. Mm-hmm. On top of it, they go out and get an offensive lineman. They get Jack Conklin. Mm-hmm. To really go out and help what was a deficient part of that offense last year. So I was just wondering, maybe last year we were all big on Baker Mayfield. That obviously didn't work out. So do we double down? Do we get back in on Baker this year?
Nah, I'll draft him as a two. Like, I had him. I was a dope. Like a lot of the people in the industry, we all got fooled by, the OBJ stuff. And so I had him, I think, fifth or sixth at quarterback. I don't have him there at all. He's in the teens for me right now. So late round pick, and maybe you'll strike gold this year. Maybe it was we were a little bit early on Baker Mayfield, but I think Conklin is every bit as big of an addition for Baker's value as Austin Hooper is, to be honest with you, because the quarterback, and especially a guy like Baker who turns the ball over, you get pressure on him, he throws it to the wrong team. Now you alleviate some of that pressure, give him a little bit more time in the pocket, and suddenly he can find OBJ and Jarvis and Hooper and Kareem Hunt. Should be fun.
Yeah, absolutely. Other quarterback who gets a big boost, Josh Allen. I mean, they get Stephon Diggs to go along with John Brown in that offense. The only question for me is, does he get more accurate throwing the ball downfield? But, I mean, having another weapon like Stephon Diggs can't do anything but help you out.
No, I'm actually, because I have my rankings right now, and I have Deshaun Watson ahead of Allen, one spot ahead of him. Mm-hmm. But like it's close. Like you wouldn't have thought that a couple of weeks ago before the Texans traded Nuke for whatever reason. But Josh Allen was the QB6 last year. He's a good and he runs with the ball. He's that. I've said it. He's the new Cam Newton. He really is. He's tremendous. And now you give him Diggs, who's going to see way more than 94 targets, I would think, in that offense. And you've got John Brown, and you've got Cole Beasley, and Devin Singletary is a good young running back. I don't know what Dawson Knox is going to end up being, but I mean, Buffalo has weapons. They're the best team in the AFC East right now, right? And there's no argument about that either. Yeah. Exactly. So I think Josh Allen is going to end up being sixth, maybe seventh at worst at quarterback. And that's because it's, you've got, you're not going to get ahead of Mahomes. You're not going to get a Lamar. You're not going to get a Kyler or Russell Wilson. You got Dak up there as well. And then you're looking at, Deshaun Watson and Josh Allen. That's a pretty good company.
Are we going to stop sleeping on him in drafts? I mean, because I think people still get hung up on the accuracy issues, right? And the fact that he's not a traditional passer. Mm-hmm. And I think that hurts him in drafts. And I'm just wondering if people are going to start to kind of shake that off a little bit.
If you as a fantasy owner don't realize already that a running quarterback is so much more valuable than just a guy who's a pocket passer, then maybe you want to take up something else. I don't know, croquet. I'm not sure, but he's the man. Josh Allen, I really loved what I saw from him last season. They will run design runs for him. He's got a big arm. Accuracy will improve, hopefully. And, he's had a few seasons under his belt now. So, he's going to end up, I would guess, and I haven't done like a 10 round mock yet. I'm going to do a fiver this week. I'm going to guess he's off the board before the 10th round. I'm probably 8th or 9th.
I would think so. Yeah.
That's where I would project him to go.
Yeah, no doubt. All right, so now this is going to get interesting, right? Because you go down to Carolina. DJ Moore feels like a definite winner here because of the Teddy Bridgewater move. I mean, so DJ Moore, I think we both agree on, right, that he's a winner in this situation. The one that the name that I've brought up that has kind of caused some debate, not just here, but like with other people I've talked to, is Curtis Samuel. Mm-hmm. Whether or not he's a winner or a loser, and this can kind of transition us from one to the next. Sure. I feel like he's a winner, one, just because, look, after Kyle Allen and Will Greer, it can't get worse. It can't get worse. I also feel like having Robbie Anderson sort of helps a little bit because they'll have Anderson running these streaks and running these vertical routes and maybe open some things up for Samuel to run some of those more intermediate routes, maybe those underneath routes. And he's got a more accurate quarterback. I don't think he's going to be some like gangbusters wide receiver one, but I think he gets better than he was last year.
I just feel like you add Robbie I'll draft Anderson over Samuel because they spent the money on him. He's the field stretcher. And to be honest, I love Curtis Samuel, but he hasn't really developed into what I feel like the Panthers were hoping he'd develop into in his first few years in the league. I mean, I even see rumors, and they're probably just rumors, that you know the Panthers might look to put him on the trade block. I don't think that's going to happen, but they spent $20 million on Robbie Anderson, and he's going to get more targets than Curtis Samuel this week. Now, they can use Curtis Samuel in a variety of ways. You can use him as a gadget player out of the backfield, that kind of thing, on some jet sweeps. But I have Anderson ranked ahead of Samuel. They're really close, but they're both fours or fives, and Anderson is going to he's going to get targets, and maybe those targets otherwise would have went to Samuel. Now you've got another player in the mix who's going to eat into the target opportunities, and that and DJ Moore, I don't feel like his value goes down at all because he's sort of a different player than Samuel or he's Robbie fine. Anderson, but I don't like this move. It's a good move for Teddy Bridgewater. I don't think it's a good move for Curtis Samuel.
I feel like with Samuel, one, maybe the targets do come. He actually had 105 targets last year. Even if the target number comes down, I'm encouraged that I think there'll be more quality targets, right? Like, he just, the quarterback situation was a mess in Carolina last year. And I feel like even if he doesn't get to 100 targets, that maybe he'll just have more catchable targets and he'll turn them in. Like, he was a guy that was, I think he was top 15 in terms of, like, total air yards. And he was, like, in the 50s, I believe, in terms of actual receiving yards. Like, there was a huge discrepancy. And so, like, I just want him to have a quarterback that can throw the ball to him, not just near him. And so maybe – so that's sort of what I'm looking at. But
right, So Bridgewater being more accurate makes you like Samuel more. Anderson coming in and eating up targets makes me like him less, basically.
Yeah, I mean, I get it. Like, and I feel like this is a name – like, I've mentioned this to several people, and, like, it – there has been a definite divide on how people feel about Curtis Samuel. So he's going to be one that I think a lot of people will sort of be debating as we get through the summer. All right. Guys that were just straight up, you know, that did not get help. I don't want to call them losers, but they did not get any help in free agency. Poor Deshaun Watson, man. Like, he's out here sending out, like, help messages on Twitter
on
now.
Twitter.
Like, just like he's like sending out sad messages on Twitter now. Because he loses arguably the most dynamic receiver in the league. In return, they get a running back who is older, has had injury issues. Maybe he's healthy and bounces back, but it just, I mean, he just can't, he can't win, man. Like, the offensive line has had issues. They're taking away his weapons. He's got a wide receiver core that, I don't know, might play a combined 16 games, you know, just because
the most
of
durable
health.
Guy there is probably, like, Randall Cobb. And, I mean, he hasn't been super durable either, you know. Lately.
I mean, just it's a – I feel bad for Deshaun.
he threw the football 30% of the time last season to Nuke Hopkins. And you take that away – and he's a running quarterback, so he's not going to drop too far. But, I mean, I had him third before this happened, and now I dropped him down to, like, six or seven in that area. I guess maybe the one thing that he'll have going for him is that the Texans are – the defense is they're going to probably be in a lot of high-scoring games. So maybe Deshaun is going to be, like, that quarterback who in the second half of games is, you know, going to really build up and put up some numbers maybe in garbage time, that kind of thing. But – yeah, I mean, you lose Nuke Hopkins, it ain't gonna help. And the Texans, I don't think they have a first round pick. I correct me if I'm wrong. I don't think they have a first round pick. So that hurts their chances of picking up a wide receiver who could potentially make an impact. Although, you know, the wide receiver group is pretty deep this year. So it has to hurt them. You can't lose a player of that magnitude and not see your value decrease a little bit. And that's where Watson is right now.
Yeah, I mean, just I felt so bad. He's sending out these sad messages on Twitter, and I'm like, "Be strong, man." But
you know what? I mean, the Patriots, if they offer Sony Michel and a third round pick, maybe they can get him, right?
Maybe, maybe.
Bill O'Brien, you never know, right?
So here's, not only do they not have a first round pick, they don't even pick till like the back end of the second round. I mean,
they're a playoff team. So,
man, I mean, it's just. Whew, sorry about that. Nick Chubb.
I put him in here, and here's why. No.
Well, one, you they get kept it, Kareem right? Hunt. They kept Kareem Hunt, which doesn't
That's
help.
What killed it. So, like, Nick Chubb would have been a first round pick if Kareem Hunt had gotten an offer from another team. Here's the stats that you need to remember. Last year, when Nick Chubb was the featured back, this guy ranked sixth in fantasy points among running backs. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Right.
When Kareem Hunt returned from suspension, Nick Chubb was 23rd, Marcus. That's mm-hmm. He is completely devoid of any value as a pass catcher. Any with Kareem Hunt in the mix. And then you bring in Austin Hooper. So Nick Chubb, he might run for 1,300 yards. He had two touchdowns when Kareem Hunt came back. Two. He had six wow. before that. So I love Nick Chubb. I think he's a tremendous back. And if it was a situation where he was in Houston and he was going to get all the damn touches, he's a first-round pick, no doubt about it. He's a right. second-round pick now. But don't underestimate how good Kareem Hunt is. He was a stud in fantasy in Kansas City before he was an idiot and got yep. cut. And now he is still a great player, and they have two great backs. And to be a featured back who can be a top eight back, unless your name is Derrick Henry, you've got to have some semblance of catching the ball out of the backfield, right? You've got to have it. Saquon, Christian McCaffrey, Alvin Kamara, Dalvin Cook, Zeke, what are they all in common? They can catch the ball out of the backfield. Chubb's not going to get the opportunity to do that. And so he's going to be limited in terms of what his statistical ceiling could be. And that's why I have him now as a second round pick. This hurts him. It really hurts him.
No, I agree. Yeah. No, I absolutely agree. Even Kareem Hunt, I think, gets hurt a little bit just with Austin Hooper being there, because that's yeah. one more person yep. to throw the football to. Mm-hmm. So like it's one of those things where it's great for the Browns offense as a whole.
Right.
For us, in terms of what we do and playing fantasy, it's not great.
It sucks.
Not great at all.
Yeah.
Philip Lindsay, I mean, this is obvious. Melvin Gordon comes in and takes over as the number one back there in Denver. Philip Lindsay gets a bump down. Royce Freeman, unless he gets traded or cut or something like that, I mean, he takes a huge, huge yep. loss here. But Philip Lindsay is a guy who definitely gets hurt by Melvin Gordon showing up in Denver.
So maybe it's just me. I don't know, guys. You tell me. Doesn't Philip Lindsay remind you of Melvin Gordon? Like in terms of their skill set and the way that they play, like they're both guys who are explosive backs who could take the ball to the house anytime. You know, they're adequate pass catchers as well. Gordon's had some good seasons as a pass. To me, it's like they're kind of like the same back. Like they don't really complement one another. They kind of have the same sort of skill sets, right?
Right, right.
So
yeah, I mean, I think Gordon will be the starter. I think he's he's a slightly better pass catcher, which
yes,
helps.
Yes, but. Like Gordon, I feel like he's no more than a low RB2, high RB3, but there's going to be scenarios during the course of the season where, and you mentioned this earlier in the week, if Lindsay gets hot, they'll give him the damn ball. If Gordon gets hot, they'll give him the ball. Right. If it's Lindsay's series and they get down into the red zone, they're going to give him the ball. So it's going to be really hard to decipher which guy week to week could end up being the better back. Gordon will be the favorite to be the better back because he got paid and he's Melvin Gordon. He's been great outside of right. his rookie campaign. But remember, I don't think he scored a touchdown as a rookie, right?
He did not.
Since then he's been awesome. But I mean, he goes from an RB1 to an RB3, maybe a low RB2 at best, and then Lindsay's like a four now. So
yeah,
it's a bad move for fantasy.
Absolutely. Julian Edelman. He loses his quarterback. I mean, I don't know what else to say about it. I mean, unless we really believe in Jarrett Stidham or Brian Hoyer, or they draft
Cam Newton. If
Cam Newton shows up, then Julian Edelman gets off this list. But as of this moment, losing Tom Brady is a downgrade for Julian Edelman.
So here's Edelman is going to see a lot of. I don't know what the Patriots are going to do with their passing game. He's going to get a lot of targets. They're not going to be as good. right. I would suggest. Depending on who the quarterback is. And I mean, right now, like, what are the Patriots' options? You can't convince me that Jared Stidham's going to be a good quarterback in the NFL. You can't. Cam? Did they trade for Andy Dalton? I don't know. I mean,
he's still out there. Jameis is out there.
But that's what I was just going to mention. But, like, can Bill Belichick really handle having a quarterback who's going to throw the ball to the wrong team that many times every single season? I don't buy it. So, yeah, you're right. I mean, did you see that? It was like a mashup on Twitter where it was the town and Edelman and Affleck was Brady and that was so good. But I mean, Edelman's value takes and Edelman's not a spring chicken. He's not a young dude anymore. So he's still going to get targets unless the Patriots make some significant moves in the passing game. But you go from the GOAT to hell anybody else. Right. It's going to hurt.
Christian Kirk. Obviously, he's a guy that I loved last year, and it never really took off the way I wanted it to. But, look, I think he's still good, but having DeAndre Hopkins automatically means you are going to see fewer targets. I mean, there's just no way around that right now.
Yeah. I mean, so it's good because, you know, Nuke's going to draw coverage. That's a good thing. But in terms of his statistical ceiling, you're adding 150 targets, right? You're adding 150 mm-hmm. targets to that offense. And so that means somebody's losing targets. And to me, like, Kirk is probably a three now. I'd guess in that three range. Isabella's not even draftable at this point, and Fitzgerald's probably a late rounder at best. So, and don't forget, Kenyon Drake is a really good pass catcher. Like, he's going to catch balls too. So, it's one of those scenarios where there's a lot of mouths to feed, and Christian Kirk goes from having a nice ceiling, a very nice ceiling, a wide receiver two ceiling, a high wide receiver two ceiling too. Now he's in the wide receiver three category, and he's got to contend with one of the best wide receivers in the league for targets, and that's going to be tough for him.
Let's back up a second, because I just saw a tweet from James Palmer who says that the Broncos officially signed Melvin Gordon today. The belief is that Gordon will be Denver's bell cow. Does that change anything for you? Are you buying it? Does that change anything if you are?
Dude, I mean, it's, you know, what are we in right now? It's March.
Yeah,
a lot of stuff's going to be. I don't know. You still. Here's the thing. If Lindsey, and God please let us have a training camp. But if Lindsey looks good in training camp and in the preseason, okay, and we know he's an explosive guy, do you really think Gordon's going to get 350 touches in that offense? I mean, I don't know. Like, to me, I would project him more for like maybe 250, right? I mean, which isn't bad at all, but if it happens, great. Then Gordon's value, I still don't think he's a running back one. He's going to be a running back two. But I don't know, man. Like, you still got two backs that are pretty darn good in Phillip right. Lindsay and Royce Freeman, unless they trade Freeman, which is possible. I guess we'll find out. You know, we'll find out in the weeks and months to come. But that would be great if it did happen, that's for sure. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. But I'm skeptical. I'll leave it at that. Yeah. John Brown, still in a good spot, but Stephon Diggs being there, Fabs, I think that takes Brown down a peg or two, right?
No doubt. And Brown had, I believe he had 114 targets somewhere in that neighborhood last year. That's going to decrease. John Brown was really good he was really good for, he was probably a wide receiver 2-3. You know, he was an elite wide receiver, obviously, but he was pretty good last season, career year from a fantasy standpoint. But when you, again, same kind of thing as Christian Kirk, when you add a wide receiver who's going to command 100 targets, 110 targets, your target share is going to go down without question. Mm-hmm. Cole Beasley's going to get his. I mentioned Dawson Knox. Devin Singletary can catch the ball out of the backfield. So John Brown goes from being like a wide receiver 2 type to being probably more of a 3. I mean, maybe even a 4. I moved John Brown down in my rankings, and I'm going to take a quick look right now. He's in that wide receiver 3-4 category. He's actually right in the Christian Kirk, Will Fuller, Marvin Jones, Jarvis Landry, Debo Samuel kind of area.
Got it. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Let's get through the last couple here. Jameis Winston. I mean, he's still out there, so right now he's taking an L because he doesn't have a job.
Here's my prediction.
Okay.
Back up in Pittsburgh. That's where he's going to be.
Interesting. I mean, look.
There's no starting jobs.
There's no starting jobs, mostly because the Chargers don't seem interested in going after any of these guys out here. Mm-hmm. The Bears are bearing it up. Having him at Pittsburgh means he very likely will play. I mean, just knowing Ben Roethlisberger's health situation over the last couple of years, the fact that Ben is always good to miss a couple of games, Jameis very well could play if he does sign in Pittsburgh. Steelers, we can see him on the field.
The Steelers were still contending for a playoff berth with the garbage they had at quarterback last season.
Yeah.
They still – that's a good team.
Yeah.
You know, they have a good defense, a really good defense. They've got weapons on the offensive side of the football. Deontay Johnson, I love him. James Washington can make plays. They added Eric Ebron. Juju obviously is in the mix. They've got James Conner. They've got Benny Snell. Let's see what they add during the course of the draft. Dude, if Roethlisberger goes down and your backup is garbage, like Jameis Winston's not an elite, you know, quarterback by any stretch of the imagination, but he's a hell of a good backup for Pittsburgh. And I think that would be because he's not, where's he going to go? I don't think he'll go to New England, right?
No.
The Chargers don't want him. The Bears traded for Foles. I'm just thinking, like, where can he go where there's a starting job available? Miami is going to draft a quarterback, and they got Fitzpatrick. They're fine there. Like, where's he going to go? Redskins? No, they traded for Kyle Allen. I just don't see it. And yeah, it looks like Dwayne Haskins is going to be the guy. So Winston goes to Pittsburgh is, for me, his best fit because there's no place else that he can go where he's going to get a starting job. So why not go to a team that desperately needs a backup quarterback with a starter who missed a lot of time last season due to injuries and is certainly not a spring chicken.
Right. Yeah, no doubt. Last one. I'm actually going to switch this one up. I had Mitchell Trubisky on the list, but people aren't really drafting Trubisky, so like that's
nope,
whatever. Derek Carr. Another guy who's sort of like a middling, a QB2, like maybe you pick him up off the waiver wire if the situation is right. He's going to be in a legitimate quarterback competition this year with Marcus Mariota. And there's a very good chance that, you know, either if there's a training camp and he doesn't perform well, or if we get into the regular season and he has a couple of bad games, there's a very real chance, Fabs, that Marcus Mariota could end up with that starting job in Las Vegas. I almost said Oakland. Las Vegas. Yeah.
What did we talk about, right? Who's their GM? Mike Mayock. Yep. Mike Mayock had Mariota ranked as his top quarterback the year he came out between Mariota and Jameis. He likes him. Derek Carr, you tell me, if Derek Carr, okay, has a couple of bad games in a row, you're not expecting the calls for Mariota to come out either from the crowd or the coaches or both. It's going to happen. I said it earlier in the week. Mariota's going to start games for the Raiders. I don't think there's any question about it.
Yeah, no, I believe that too. So yeah, Derek Carr, very much on the hot seat in Vegas with the Raiders. So there you go. Those are some of our winners and losers. I'm sure we'll have more as we as things kind of shake out and settle down. I mean, we'll definitely do this again after the draft when we know some more of where some of these rookies are going. So last thing, I'm calling an audible on this here too because I was going to talk about, you know, now that we're all kind of locked in our homes and we can't go out to eat, like what you're cooking. And so I'll save that for another time. But as you mentioned at the top of the show, Fabs, I mean, it is opening day in Major League Baseball. At least it would have been opening day if we were living in normal times. So it just sort of made me wonder, like, if you guys have any specific opening day memories. I'll start. I had one. This wasn't actually opening day. It was a Dodger home opener in 2000. And at the time, I was between jobs, so I had plenty of time. And a good friend of mine, he was still in high school, but he had gotten tickets to Dodger opening day in 2000 against the Cincinnati Reds. And it was Ken Griffey Jr.'s first year in Cincinnati. So we were all excited. I loved Jr. He was still one of my favorite baseball players of all time. And I remember, this is how different of a time it was, right? It was 2000. I went to go pick up my buddy. Like I said, he was a senior in high school. And I just remember parking out in front of the school and like, they just let him come out. I think he just went to the front office and it was like, I think he told the people in the front office, like, hey, my mom's here to pick me up. And like, I didn't have to walk in or show any ID or have a note. They just like let him walk outside. Like, and he hopped in the car and we went to Dodger Stadium. Side note to this, like, this happened in 2000. I don't think his mom actually found out about this until maybe like 5 years ago. I really thought that he had told her this whole story and that he had gotten the all clear from her. He had done this on his own. But we went to Dodger Stadium. I remember the Dodgers ended up winning. I can't remember what the final score was, but I remember a big situation in the eighth inning. Bases loaded, two outs, Junior at the plate. They go to the bullpen. The place is going insane. And whoever it was comes out of the pen, strikes out Ken Griffey Jr. on a high fastball to get out of the inning. The Dodgers hang on and end up winning their home opener that day. that was like, I mean, literally it's 20 years ago, but like I will remember that forever and ever and ever. That's one of my favorite, I guess, as close to opening day as I can remember sort of memories there.
Yeah, the one that comes to mind is for me is Jeter, his first year, which was 90, was it 96, Eddie? Was it Jeter's first year 96?
Yeah, I believe
no.
so.
But is 96? That... Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, but he hit a home run off of Dennis Martinez, and like that was like, oh, Jeter's here, you know, like is there so much hype around him and that kind of thing, and he ended up being one of the greatest shortstops in the history of the game. And if you don't believe that, you can at me, I don't care. He is, you know. So I remember that. I also remember, and Eddie, there was, you remember this too, there was an opening day, I believe, and I don't remember who, it might have been against the Royals, where Andy Pettit started and it was snowing.
I was just going to, that was my story. My dad was at that game.
Yeah, go ahead.
My dad had a stretch, and I forgot when it ended recently, but he would always go to Yankees opening day, and I remember one time he went and he had like, remember those like the majestic jackets? You guys don't remember? They used to like put the buttons you'd sell. Mm-hmm. And like Joe Torre would always wear his. And this is obviously during the Joe Torre era of the Yankees. And I remember like my dad was going with not a Yankees like hat like you're wearing, Faz, like a Yankees like ski hat where you're pulling on top of your head. And he had like the majestic jacket because it was literally snowing outside for a baseball game. And he was at that game. And I don't think like they played through it. It was just like a flurry, but they were playing through. They didn't stop the game down, like it wasn't postponed or anything, and which is it's crazy how cold baseball is. And I'm sure other parts of the country have cold games the first few months and the last month, but a snowing baseball game is definitely a sight to see. That was my story.
Yeah, speaking of baseball too, like I have you know some friends who are MLB players, and I'm texting with them. I'm like, you know, how you guys doing, blah blah blah. Some of them have stayed in Florida, and what's gonna happen? Like, and some of the responses were like that they could be playing baseball into December. How the hell are you going to play a baseball game in December in the Bronx or in Chicago or in Philadelphia? You can't do it. How the hell are you going to do that?
There's just no way.
Like, for me, the best thing to do would be whenever they start. So, you know, say that they're going to start, I don't know. I just throw a date out there, June 1st. Whoever the teams are supposed to play on June 1st and the original schedule – that's where they pick it up, and you just go through. And I don't know how many games it's going to be. You got to make sure everybody's playing the same amount of games. December baseball? How the hell is that going to work?
You're potentially just going to have to lose games here. I think you'll see more actual true doubleheaders. I think to try to fill in some of these things, you know, like we've gotten used to these like day night doubleheaders, which are whack as far as I'm concerned. Like play an actual double, like you know, I like to see like play nine innings. Spend a half hour to get the field ready in between, and let's go play another game right after that. So I think I think you'll see a lot more of those if we have a season to try and like keep the schedule, you know, as together as possible. But I don't see any way, if this drags on, I just don't see any way around actually just losing games and just having a shortened season.
One thing I liked because it would mean it's baseball earlier than pushing it back and, you know, to later in the summer. But especially for places that were hit hard by the virus, and the Yankees obviously being in New York City with it being a pretty bad spot for the coronavirus, is that they would not play home games in Yankee Stadium. They would play home games in other opponent stadiums, so they would call it a home game. And part of me is like, well, I desperately want baseball back, but the other part of me is like, you're losing the incredible home field advantage. I was like, oh, I mean, if they could move into like Baltimore, I mean, a lot of Yankees fans travel there anyway. It's like maybe that's not so bad.
What about Tampa?
Yeah, that too. Tampa's another really good.
Have you ever been to that stadium? That stadium is awful.
Yeah, and you got all the snowbirds down there in Florida.
Awful. That stadium is not even a professional stadium, unfortunately for the Rays, but because their team is really good. So, I'll say this: like this whole situation sucks for everybody. Today is the first day that I'm really kind of like depressed because I love baseball, man. Like I've been a Yankee fan since I was 7 or 8 years old, and today sucks because, you know, we're missing out
baseball.
On opening day.
This should have been baseball. You know what? Today would have been the opening day, and also would have been the Sweet 16 in the tournament.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah. So,
damn you, 2020.
Saying it out loud makes it hurt a little bit more, actually. I was like, making my amends with it until I said it out loud, and now
I would have been like setting my fantasy baseball daily draft my team today. And
it makes you miss like the little things. Like I would trade sitting in traffic and for 2 hours to drive like 30 miles to Anaheim to see the Yankees play the Angels. Yeah. I would definitely do it. I would sit in the traffic to get into Dodger Stadium, the one lane funneling at Dodger Stadium in Silver Lake. I would go do that. Like I did that a couple years ago,
man. Me and my three closest friends, we all got together and we did Dodger opening day, Dodgers Giants, and it was packed. It was crazy. We were like crammed into like the left field corner, but man, it was a day, you know.
But you just reminded me of an episode of Curb Your Enthusiasm, and
Larry, yeah.
Latte with, Larry, I got my Latte Larry shirt on.
With the HOV Larry, yeah,
of with course. Larry HOV, yeah, of course. So, yeah.
All right, enough sadness there. Okay, that's it. We are done. We appreciate you listening and downloading and viewing. If you are seeing our video clips as well, we certainly appreciate all of that. Tell two friends to tell two friends. Rate, review, and remember, the secret to staying young is having no sense of time. Take care of yourselves. We'll see you on Tuesday.